Humble Inquiry, The Gentle Art of Asking Instead of Telling. Author Edgar H. Schein. The Art of Asking. Senior managers usually claim that they are open, that they want to hear from subordinates, and that they take the information seriously. However, subordinates either don't feel safe bringing bad news to their bosses, or they've tried but never got any response. So they concluded that their input wasn't welcome, and they gave up. Shockingly, they settled for risky alternatives rather than upset their bosses with potentially bad news. What's missing here is a climate in which lower-level employees feel safe to bring up issues that need to be addressed. This starts with asking the right questions, and this is what humble inquiry is all about. What is inquiry? What we ask, how we ask it, where and when we ask it all matter. But the essence of humble inquiry goes beyond just overt questioning. This kind of inquiry derives from an attitude of interest and curiosity. And feelings of here and now humility are the basis of curiosity and interest. This inquiry implies a desire to build a relationship that will lead to more open communication. It also implies that one makes oneself temporarily vulnerable and, thereby, arouses positive helping behaviours in the other person. Four forms of inquiry. 1. Humble inquiry. Humble inquiry is the fine art of drawing someone out, of asking questions to which you don't already know the answer, of building a relationship based on curiosity and interest in the other person. It maximizes your curiosity and interest in the other person. It maximizes your curiosity and interest in the other person and minimizes bias and preconceptions about that person. You want to access your ignorance and ask for information in the least biased and threatening way. 2. Diagnostic inquiry. This kind of inquiry occurs when you get curious about a particular thing the other person is telling you and choose to focus on it. You're steering the conversation and influencing the other person's mental process in unknown ways. For example, someone asks you how to get to Massachusetts Avenue, and you respond with, "Where are you trying to get?" You might think of this as still humble inquiry, since you've been asked to help. But actually, you're steering the conversation and running the risk that the other person might say, "None of your business." 3. Confrontational inquiry. The essence of this inquiry is that you insert your own ideas, but in the form of a question. You tacitly giving advice, and this often arouses resistance in others and makes it harder to build relationships with them, because they have to explain or defend why they aren't feeling or doing something that you proposed. 4. Process-oriented inquiry. An option that's always on the table is to shift the conventional focus onto the conversation itself. If you're trying to develop a good relationship and feel the conversation going in the wrong direction, you can humbly ask for some version of, "What's happening? Did I offend you?" to explore what might be wrong and how it might be fixed. The culture of do and tell. The degree to which superiors and subordinates can humble differs by the basic assumptions of the culture they grew up in. The more authoritarian the culture, the greater the sociological distance between the upper and lower levels of status or achievement, and, therefore, the harder it is for the superior to be humble. But beyond these points, specific aspects of some cultures make humble inquiry more difficult. These aspects are valuing task accomplishment more than relationship building, and the culture of tell, because to ask is to reveal ignorance and weakness, while knowing things and telling people is highly valued. Types of role relations. Sociologists have proposed various ways to classify all the kinds of relationships that we get into. To understand humble inquiry, It's useful to distinguish particularly between task-orientated relationships and person-oriented relationships. Task-oriented relationships are those in which one person needs something specific from the other person. They are impersonal and emotionally neutral. Relative status is defined by the degree of dependence, which defines the degree of here-and-now humility that is appropriate. Person-oriented relationships are, by contrast, more emotionally charged because one or both parties are interested in each other and expect the relationship to continue. This kind of relationship allows for emotional expression. Personalization as relationship builder. It's important for all of us to think of a continuum that stretches from the extreme task-oriented to the extremely personal. The question we must then ask is whether the key to making interdependent relationships work is to personalize them to some degree. Personalization is the process of acknowledging the other person as a whole human, not just a role. The minimal level of personalization in this sense would be to share first and last names. Once the process of personalization has been launched and accepted, in that both parties display comfort with first names, the Pandora's box is open to endless other personal questions and revelations. But this process isn't without its own situational propriety that we all live by. For example, if a doctor is trying to personalize his relationship with the nurse while staying on the role, task level, he could ask about where she got her training, what other doctors she had worked with, and so on. However, a question about her opinion about the hospital might be pushing the boundary in that she might not know how safe it would be to do that. Also, when people at the same organization from different ranks and occupations decide to have lunch at the same table, this enables them to explore getting to know each other at a more personal level. This in turn helps in reducing status differences and making everyone aware of their mutual interdependence. The huge symbolic implication of this is that the senior doctor is publicly humbling himself by sitting with his subordinate staff, thereby empowering them to be more open with him. Trust, a key factor to social survival. To be humble, to ask instead of telling, to try to personalize the relationship, requires some level of trust. Trust, in the context of conversation, is believing that the other person will acknowledge me, not take advantage of me, not embarrass or humiliate me, tell me the truth and not treat me, work on my behalf and support the goals we have agreed to. In order to build a higher level of trust, we can convey this through making ourselves more vulnerable through humble inquiry and personalization. This is essential because it shows the other person that you're willing to go farther than just a minimum task-oriented relationship. Survival and learning. Learning new things is easy when there's no unlearning involved. But if the new learning, the attitude of humble inquiry, has to displace some old habits of telling, two anxieties come into play that have to be managed. Survival anxiety is the realization that unless we learn the new behavior, we'll be at a disadvantage. But as we confront the learning task, we realize it may be difficult, or we may not want to tolerate the period of incompetence while we learn, or our friends may not understand or welcome our new behavior. Anticipating all these potential difficulties is learning anxiety and causes resistance to change. As learning anxiety remains stronger than survival anxiety, we'll resist change and avoid learning. To facilitate new learning, we need to decrease learning anxiety. We have to feel that the new behavior is worthwhile, that it's possible to learn, that there will be guidance, coaching and support. Here are some steps to help you get started. 1. Slow down and vary the pace. 2. Reflect more and ask yourself humble inquiry questions. 3. Engage the artist within you. 4. Review your own behavior after an event. 5. Become sensitive to coordination needs in your work. 6. As a leader, build relationships with your team members. Take charge. All of us find ourselves from time to time in situations that require innovation and some risk-taking. Some of us are formal leaders. Most of us just have leadership thrust upon us by the situation we find ourselves in. The ultimate challenge is for you to discover that at those moments you shouldn't succumb to telling, but to take charge with humble inquiry.